Welcome to Midrats with Sal from Commander Salamander and Eagle One from Eagle Speak at Sea or Shore, your home for a discussion of national security issues and all things maritime. And welcome aboard, everybody. I am the aforementioned Sal, and hey, lucky you today. My usually illustrious co-host, the ever-genial Eagle One of Eagle Speak, he is in one of those strange little parts of the world where you just can't get good connectivity. So he will just be with us in spirit today, and you're just stuck with me and our guest. And for those that are joining us live, if you'd like to help me out, if you scroll to the bottom of the show page, that's where you'll find the chat room. And unlike last week, the ones and the zeros seem to be working just fine. If you have some observations you'd like to make during the course of the show, or if there's a question you would like for me to direct to our guest that you don't think I'll get to, that's a great place to put it. I'll monitor it during the course of the show, and we'll be glad to steal your ideas as they come across the transom. And for those that are new to the show and may want to catch up on some previous shows, or if you have to leave after the initial intro to the show and you want to catch up on what you missed, you can always get the full archive of the show over at Blog Talk Radio, or you can take a shortcut and just get the free podcast over on iTunes or Stitcher, so it's waiting for you when you have time in your busy life. But hey, enough of that. Let's go ahead and plow into today's shows. And when you look at the organizational structure that guides our military, the Department of Defense, what trains, mans, and equips our military and provides the guidance and support to the civilian leadership, what broadly defines how we run things today is the Goldwater-Nichols Act of 1986. And we've done it a few times here on Midrats. And you do have seen in the last few years, especially as we came up to the 30th anniversary, a steady drumbeat of people who are talking about, is it time here in the second decade of the 21st century to look at Goldwater-Nichols and to know whether this system created at the height of the Cold War still serves the needs of our nation. And we brought on today for the next 30 minutes, I think, a great guest to discuss this and other related issues. And you can find a link to an article he recently published over at War on the Rocks titled "Don't Rush to Fix Goldwater-Nichols." And we're going to use that as the framework for our discussion today. And the author of that article is Justin Johnson of the Heritage Foundation. Justin spent over a decade working on defense and foreign policy issues on Capitol Hill before coming over to the Heritage Foundation's Center for National Defense. He's now on the defense and foreign policy analyst at the Allison Center for National Security and Foreign Policy. Justin received his master's degree from the Naval War College with a focus on terrorism and maritime domain. He is also a member of the 2013-14 Future Leaders Program at the Foreign Policy Initiative. He was also, right before then, at the class for the Next Generation National Security Leaders at the Center for New American Security. And he's also part of the 2012 class of Heritage Foundation's Marshall Fellows. He brings to the table a nice international view. Even though he's a nice, wholesome Midwesterner from St. Louis, Missouri, in Iowa, he also moved on to Eastern Europe, living in Germany, Belarus, Czech Republic. He also attended Covenant College in Lookout Mountain, Georgia, where he studied both philosophy and art. Justin, welcome to Midrats.
Sal, thanks so much. I think I need to pay you for that kind introduction.
Well, and I mean this in the best possible way, because we have a military-focused guest list usually, you get a lot of people from the technical side of the house. And we've actually had a few shows where we've talked about the importance of intellectual diversity and national security, where if you have a table full of engineers, you're only using half of the brain. You've got to have a good balance. So it's nice to be able to talk to you, somebody that has a background in philosophy and art, because as you know, and hopefully more people will come to appreciate over the years, there's a lot about those two areas of studies that adds some depth and nuance to a very, very complicated area called national security. So anyway, it's great to have you on there, and I wanted to take time to outline it for our guests. And speaking of complicated things, and we've, as I mentioned in the intro, in the show, we've brought up Goldwater Nichols a few times because some people have been writing recently about updating it. But what I'd like to do for our listeners who just may not know all that much of why it came to exist and they just know the name, the big post-World War II restructuring of the DOD was in 1949, and then 37 years later came along the Goldwater-Nichols Act in 1986. You know, to know where you're going, you need to know where you came from, so to speak. So Goldwater-Nichols in 86, what were they trying to refine, solve, and fix at that time?
Yeah, so that's a great place to start, because when you look back at the Goldwater-Nichols process that really was 4.5-5 years long, what drove it was at least two specific incidents. You had Operation Eagle Claw, also called Desert One, which as you and your listeners probably know well, was the mission to rescue American hostages in Iran. Ended tragically before they even made contact with the enemy, with 8 service members killed, a bunch of equipment lost. Also, a few years later, Operation Urgent Fury was an operation to rescue American citizens in Grenada. That was largely a successful mission, but in retrospect, you know, there are a number of serious challenges. And what those two sort of case studies led to was a realization that each of the military services was still largely operating in its own little world. The Army, the Navy, the Air Force, for example, couldn't play well with each other. So they had a very clear purpose, those in Congress and those in the Pentagon working on this issue, which was to try to figure out how do you help the services actually, or maybe help is too generous a word, how do you force the services to play well with each other, to operate well with each other. You know, that obviously became known as jointness. They did a number of things in Goldwater-Nichols in 1986 to do that. They changed command structures, they changed promotion structures, a variety of different things to really try to force the services and individual service members to learn how to work with each other so that they would avoid similar situations in the future like Desert One, where just basically a lack of communication, the inability to communicate well across services was one of the leading factors in that tragic incident.
There's another terminology that, matter of fact, I was speaking with somebody recently who invests a lot of their time working on the POM, and there's a language that most people who work the issues don't really understand either. And one thing that is happening with the 2017 NDAA, that's the National Defense Authorization Act of 2017, to explain all of our acronyms, that is looking at some refinements to some of the things of Goldwater-Nichols. If you could, for a second, describe what the NDAA is and what is going on in 2017 that informs this discussion.
Yeah, so the NDAA is one of two annual bills that Congress does or that Congress works on to fund and authorize and set policies for the Department of Defense. One is the appropriations bill that provides funding, so the actual money to pay for people and things. The other one, the NDAA, is the Authorization Act. Authorizing means setting policy, setting budget limits, providing the legal authority to do things or to organize and train and equip. So the NDAA this year, and particularly Senator McCain, who is the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, so he's the primary author of the Senate version of the NDAA, excuse me, he has been very interested in what he calls Bullwinkle's reform. So he's looked back and said, you know, as you said, it's been about 30 years since Bullwinkle was enacted. Maybe it's time to take a look at that again and see if we need to make some tweaks or fundamentally change things. And so he, in his version of the NDAA, put in a number of aggressive structural organizational changes, many of which the senior leaders in the Pentagon have reacted against pretty strongly. But I think one of the first problems that we need to identify is the fact that, you know, Goldwater-Nichols reform, that phrase, means a lot of things to a lot of different people in Washington and policy circles. In the last year or two, it's sort of become a trendy catchphrase, as is all too often the case here in Washington. If you can attach your pet project or issue to whatever the latest trendy phrase is, you might be able to move it forward. And I'm afraid a little bit of that has happened here with Goldwater-Nichols. Some people say Goldwater-Nichols, and they're talking about, you know, strategy reform or strategy development reform. Some people are talking organizational reform. So, you know, how is the Office of the Secretary of Defense organized? Some people are talking combatant command reform or restructuring of some sort. Some people are talking promotions and how, you know, do we need to get into the DOTMA and different parts of military promotion boards and things like that. So, I'm sure there are even other sort of buckets of things out there that folks have lumped under. The other big one is National Security Council, what the NSC does or does not do, and its appropriate role in the national security enterprise. So all that to say, Goldwater-Nichols reform this year, there's a lot of stuff in the Senate NDAA. There's a little bit less in the House NDAA. And the way this works is those two bills are being negotiated, are being conferenced, is what they call it, where they're trying to find sort of a middle ground between the two versions that the president, that both chambers can pass and the president can eventually sign. The Pentagon has raised some serious concerns about some of the specific provisions that Senator McCain in particular has raised. But I think bottom line, at the end of that, there will at least be some major moves in the NDAA when it comes before Congress again, comes to the White House for a signature or a veto, that there'll be some major moves in there on Goldwater-Nichols. We just don't know what exactly they are yet.
And as you mentioned before, Goldwater-Nichols itself was something that was a process that took 4 to 5 years to actually get to fruition. So if this is year one or year two, if we'll follow the same timeline, it's going to take a while. And if I'm incorrect here, you know, please outline it to me. Those in uniform do have some issues with the joint requirement and maybe a little bit with the promotion boards. But you can see where pushback comes from, because everybody on active duty now, Goldwater-Nichols is all they've ever known. So you have a lot of established reality that people are used to, and, you know, new is different, different is scary, scary is bad, a little bit of that going on. But when you're messing with the joint structures, promotion, and the empire that's been built over the National Security Council, you could see where you would get a natural constituency to push back on you. And Senator McCain does seem to be driving the discussion at this point over at the Senate. And one thing I'm curious about, besides Senator McCain, does he have a counterpart on this issue over at the House of Representatives? And is there a bipartisan interest in doing this, or is this predominantly one party or the other taking a position?
Yeah, great question. So I think if you look in the House, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee is Congressman Matt Thornberry of Texas. And he, like McCain, is very interested in reform, defense reform. But he has a very different style or sort of process for looking at these issues. If you look at his versions of the NDAA this year and last year, he's focused on sort of iterating on finding, taking, not going for, you know, the big bang, 100% solution right out of the gate in his first NDAA, but actually saying, all right, let's build this methodically. We've got a number of years we can work on this. None of these problems are going to be solved or turn into crises overnight. Senator McCain, on the other hand, is very much, running as hard as he can. I'm not sure he knows how to stop. Just personally, he's a very aggressive, strong, but yet thoughtful person. So he's out there really driving the front edge of this discussion. Now, there's pros and cons to both of those sort of strategies. But I think the sort of the question before whether the House or the Senate approach is better or worse really is, let's figure out what the problems are, right? So if we want to reform or improve Goldwater-Nichols, or, you know, maybe we should just take Goldwater-Nichols, that phrase, off the table and talk about individual pieces of this. Let's talk about, you know, how do we improve strategy development, or how do we improve the DoD organizational structure, or the chain of command, or the National Security Council. I think on each of those, with some more work, with you know, maybe another year or two of the House, of the Congress and the Pentagon and the White House working together, I think we can get to some better sort of problem statements that then can be turned into real substantive legislation. My fear this year is that we're sort of, at least in the Senate, putting the cart before the horse, trying to find the magic bullet right out of the gate, which, you know, yet there may be this sort of instinctive resistance in the Pentagon, as you mentioned, for good reasons or for bad reasons. But I think there's also Congress also often has a desire or a tendency to just look for silver bullets, regardless of whether they've diagnosed the problem or whether that silver bullet is actually the right bullet for this situation. So all that said, I think the desire in the House and the Senate is good. I'm just a little bit worried that, you know, at the same time that we're asking the military, the Department of Defense, to do a lot of things, we're considering at least some potentially significant changes that may not actually solve any problems, may just add problems on rather than improving the situation.
I think you hit on it right there. You know, before, like the classic, hold on, everybody. You know, let's start with a firm foundation. And in your article, you talk about in the absence of a clear problem statement that hasn't been done yet. You know, the military planning side of the house. You know, what's commander's direction and guidance? It's the same thing. You don't have any argument yet, but you do say that in the absence of a clear problem statement, you do have two suggestions of things that Congress should focus on. The first one was supplying a clear definition of the national security problems that need to be solved. And the second was, which I think would probably create the most friction, would be strengthening Congress's ability to affect national security outcomes. Flesh those two points out for us.
Sure. Yeah. No, so I think, I mean, the first point is sort of what I was just trying to get at, which is, you know, let's be deliberative here. Yes, I think we can all instinctively agree or maybe not agree, but at least, you know, have a sense that, yeah, maybe our national security system right now isn't quite right, or there may be some areas where the system isn't working quite right, that improvement needs to be made. You know, I sort of instinctively feel that. But I think if we want to actually improve things, we need to do the due diligence of actually diving in and saying, figuring out what the specific problems are, let's define them, and then we can consider potential solutions. So actually, I think one area where this is a little bit further along is on the National Security Council. So there have been folks on both sides of the aisle saying that, you know, the National Security Council under George W. Bush and now President Obama has grown too big and too operational. This has, you know, a variety of different concerns. And so sort of the clear, or at least somewhat clear, problem definition there is it's too big, or that's one proposed problem, right? So you've got the House and the Senate saying, well, let's limit the size. That's the type of specific, you know, that's the type of specific conversation or identifying a problem and then proposing a solution. Or we can at least weigh the pros and cons of that specifically, say maybe the size is the right problem, maybe it's not. Maybe it's, you know, legal authorities or other things. But we need to get to that level of granularity in our conversations here, and not just operate out of a sense of, oh, things aren't working right, let's throw a bunch of things against the wall and see what works. Now, the other comment is, I think Congress in general needs to be more educated and more involved when it comes to foreign policy issues. Now, I'm a, you know, strict constitutional sort of guy. You know, Commander-in-Chief has all the authority. I don't want to take any authority away from the Commander-in-Chief here, but I think there's a big education gap that we often see in Congress where if you're a senator or a member of Congress in the House, if you're not on the Armed Services Committee or maybe on the Intelligence Committee or the Foreign Affairs Committee, if you're not on one of those three committees, you really don't follow these issues until it's on the front page or, you know, it's on Fox News. So the problem is that then you're learning these issues or trying to learn these issues after it's already on the front page. I don't think that's the good way to go. I think Congress should be more involved in kind of setting or at least be a participant in the conversation about sort of national strategy, ends, ways, and means, figuring out what our vital interests as a country really are, and then what it takes to defend those interests against whatever threats we might be worried about. I think Congress in general doesn't Congress tends to require reports, so that's how you got the Quadrennial Defense Review and other things like that. But frankly, I don't think those processes, at least at this point, really serve the Pentagon well, and they certainly don't help Congress get educated on these issues. So I think, you know, a move toward there's actually some interesting things in the House version of the NDAA, excuse me, where Chairman Thornberry has suggested let's do a commission on national strategy. Senator McCain in his bill has suggested, hey, maybe instead of doing these, you know, written national security strategies, we should have an annual classified session with members of Congress and the Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State, just talking through what they see sort of the vital interests are and the threats against those and how they're postured to defend U.S. interests. Actually had more of a conversation in a classified environment. I think all of those things are potentially interesting. Bottom line, though, for me is I want members of Congress outside of the specific committees of jurisdiction to be more educated earlier on, and so that Congress as a whole can play a more constructive role of saying, you know, let's define as a country what our vital interests are and then figure out what resources we need to set against that. I think this is a whole separate tangent, but, you know, I think one of the problems with or reasons we got into sequestration and the defense cuts that we've seen in the last 5 years is largely because Congress is not particularly educated on these issues. So you've got a small set of sort of the defense folks who are seeing the consequences, are seeing the threats and seeing our military shrink, but you don't have a larger sort of awareness amongst Congress. Anyway, so all that to say, I think there's a lot of reasons that we need to sort of improve Congress's education so that they can play a better role in sort of our national security strategy development.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, one thing that might help that is we've seen in the last half decade or so some younger members who have military background that have joined Congress and the Senate. You know, you got Tammy Duckworth, Joni Ernst, Tom Cotton, that hopefully can bring that discussion up a little closer. And I also agree with you about the reports. At least in my experience, they're produced by bloated staffs to be given to somebody else's staff to be staffed, but it really doesn't inform the congressman as well as I think the good intentions of developing the system was in place. I wanted to bring up something, not to pick a fight with you because I'm not really picking a fight, but just kind of looking at a comment you made from a different angle. I wanted to get your thoughts on, because you're exactly right. A lot of the impetus for Goldwater Nichols was some of the mistakes and the failures in the joint environment that came before then. And you made the following comment. I wanted to get your thoughts on my little take on it. On the second page in your article, mildly extended quote here, quote, "In contrast with the debate held in the 1980s, over the same time, the current debate has not produced clear examples of systemic failure. American defense and foreign policy in the last decade includes many failures, but it is not clear that these failures are the result of organization or systemic failures," end quote. Let me just roll a couple of thoughts towards you. I think in the last 15 years, and you can start a fight by saying this, I think we do have two significant failures that I don't think we have really had an open debate about because it's become so politicized. In Iraq, from 2003 and within a few years, we had it almost blow up completely in our face until one could argue in 2007 and 2008 that had been won and ready for phase four transition. Of course, we zeroed out that option and have had to come back in the last few years, the Islamic State, et cetera, and so forth, that came in the interim. In Afghanistan, we went in there light and effective. We turned it over to NATO, and then in 07, 08, we started to take the keys back, did the surge in 08 and 09, started to show some progress until you had the president's December of 2009 speech to outline his calendar-based withdrawal that has trickled around to where we are now with the Taliban resurgence. Two very significant events like the last decade and a half, neither of which you could really say above the operational level were successes. Are those two experiences something that you think that, or is it just too close and too political that we could have a clear-eyed look at those two underperformances and perhaps have that inform any adjustments that we're going to make to how we do national security?
Yeah, Ms. Allen, I would actually agree with you on both of those failures. My instinct, though, and so maybe that's all it is that those specific failures were at least as much about the specific decisions of key leaders, not necessarily systemic, not necessarily a problem with, the national security staff or how the Department of Defense is organized. So I'm afraid that some of sort of the drive for Goldwater Nichols reform that we're seeing in Congress, it comes from, a recognition of those two specific failures, and you can certainly throw some others on there that would probably also be pretty partisan pretty quickly. Talk about Libya or other places like that. But I think the question has to be, what are there systemic changes? Are there legal changes? Are there organizational changes that could have either, minimized or prevented any of those bad decisions? Could Congress have reorganized the Department of Defense in advance to prevent the withdrawal from Iraq? I don't think so. I think that was a really bad decision by senior leadership of our country, and I'm afraid, I'm very sympathetic to wanting to avoid bad decisions like that in the future, and I'm absolutely on board with looking at those decisions and digging deep and identifying any potential, organizational or systemic problems that may have been a part of those failures. But I'm just, my instinct at least is that most of the failures we've seen, frankly, by presidents on both sides, have been more just at the end of the day bad decisions than they really were, systemic, organizational, legal problems that, a big Goldwater-Nichols 2.0 can fix.
And as always, the system is supposed to support the decision makers, and you can have the best system in the world, but if you make bad decisions, all the bureaucracy won't be able to fix that. Well, Justin, this has been a fascinating and fast 30 minutes. I really appreciate you taking time today to come on and talk with me about what can seem like a background political issue, but it's like putting in the foundation of your house. If you don't get that right, everything you build on top of it's going to be having problems. But before we head out, let me ask you this. What are you working on right now? And if people wanted to read up on the work you've been doing or what you have coming down the road, where is a good place for people to keep track of you?
Sure. Now, first I should pitch the Heritage Foundation Defense Team. We've got our 2017 Index of U.S. Military Strength coming out on November 16th. That's a big product where we assess threats against U.S. vital interests, our ability to operate around the world, and then U.S. military capacity, capability, and readiness, just all based off of open source data. So it's our third edition of that coming out November 16th. Been doing a lot of work in support of that. The other thing that we're already starting to talk about is, and in my day job, I end up spending a lot of time talking about the defense budget. So we've got a defense budget fight at the end of this year coming up. We've got another one next year as we look at the next round of BCA sequestration level caps. So there's a lot of big questions to be answered on the budget front. Easiest way to find me, I'm on Twitter at JUS10J, Justin J, or you can find me on heritage.org at the Heritage Foundation website.
Perfect. Well, Justin, again, thanks a lot for joining us, and hope you have a great week, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Sal, thanks so much for having me.
Yes, sir. And thank you very much, everybody, for joining us today for this other edition of Midrat. And I would invite you to join us here in the next few shows of next week, our post-election edition on 13 November. We're going to have a discussion with returning guest Brian McGrath on Sea Power as a National Imperative. And week following that, on 20 November, we will have another. She's now over at AEI, but she is a Heritage Foundation alumni, Mackenzie Eglin, who will be on to discuss with us the national security requirements coming up, regardless of who gets elected. So everybody, if you haven't voted already, please do go out and vote. If you don't vote, everything else is commentary. And I hope everybody has a great Navy Day. Cheers.
Maloney wants to marry me, and so leave the strand.